Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. You know about First Take, but how about First Take, Her Take? Now, this is a brand new podcast hosted by Charlie Arnold, Kimberly Martin, and Chinne Ogwumike. They discuss and debate the biggest stories and have conversations about their lives as well as culture. Download or subscribe to First Take, Her Take, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, The Undefeated on ESPN Plus offers fans year-round premium content highlighting the intersectionality of race, culture, and sports. Check out new premium storytelling, your favorite ESPN films, and more exclusively on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe. You are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live. Check him out on The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Roy Wood Jr., what's going on, man?
Yeah, man. We got some stuff to dig into today, boy.
Yeah, man. You found out you don't have glaucoma. That's what's up.
Yeah, that was different. That was different. Got some free dum-dums out the deal, though. Always free candy from the doctor. Hands down.
I'm surprised they still let you put your nasty hands in the bowl to get them.
It is gin pop candy. I never thought about that. Damn, man.
I mean, it's a pandemic, and they're like, yeah, reach your hand in there and get some.
Let me start by saying, on the black man, go to the doctor tip. Go get yourself checked for whatever, you know, face the music, deal with it, make the changes you need to make. However, I will say, when it comes to hospitality, politeness, and kindness, the eye doctor, bottom of the barrel. This was the most robotic person I've ever, it's the most robotic practitioner I've ever worked with in my life. This person at no point smiled, cracked a joke, asked me about my day, just said, look here, eye drop, read the sign, read the chart, I might have glaucoma. I'll be right back. Excuse me? Came back with the picture. Nah, you straight. It's just some, your optic nerve just different. So it's cool. Have a good day. Ma'am, I need you to like smile or give me like just some reassurances or something. It was so methodical. It was so damn methodical, man.
Man, listen, I went and got a checkup a couple months ago, right? I hadn't been in there for a little while, decided to go in there and get checked up. And I know everybody's like, black man, go to the doctor, think, okay, that's cool. I remember I went for a checkup in 2013, and the doctor looked at me and was like, so what can I do for you? I'm like, what do you mean, what can you do for me? Like, I like you're the doctor. Like, I figured that you just kind of had, like a list, like this seems like something you do all the time, right? And so I was like, okay, whatever. So I got here. I mean, I've been here for a while. I went to the doctor and, you know, they did the blood work, all of that stuff, whatever. And they told me that everything was checking out. And the doctor was like, but there was something in the blood. I can't remember what it was. That was like a little bit low. And he's like, I don't think it's that big of a deal because this is not terribly uncommon for people of African descent. But I am going to refer you to the hematologist, which sounds like a very serious name, right? And so he tells me.
Anytime they got to refer you, like, I don't know what this is. I got to send you to the person that look at this stuff all the time.
Exactly. Now, maybe this is a bit of a racket, right? Like, I'm sending you to somebody else that's going to cost either you or your insurance company some more money. Okay. So they send me over to the hematologist, but he warns me before I get there. He's like, just so you know, the department is hematology and oncology. Just to let you know, I'm not saying you got cancer, but it all go in the same place. And so when you go into the hematology and oncology lab, they do a lot more checking on you before you walk in, right? Like I've gone and gotten the temperature checks and all that stuff, you know, at other places in the medical industrial
complex. All the questions.
Yeah, but they got more questions when you go over to the oncology department for obvious reasons. So I do that. I go up. And I go give the blood to the, oncologist. No, I went to give blood to the hematologist. He comes in, he talks to me for a second. He says, yeah, I forget why he said the reason he accepted the appointment. Cause they like, he wasn't even guaranteed to give you an appointment. Yeah. Like this is the one where I went on the app like, and I was like,
some Hollywood stylist.
That's what I'm saying. Like everywhere else you go on the app and you put in an appointment time, you go on the app with them and they're like, cool, we'll call you back. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I go in, give them the blood, and, you know, like, get blood, you get results at some point, whatever it is. It ain't normally no rush, man. I went in there at like 9 o'clock in the morning and gave them the blood. In the afternoon, I got an email.
Already.
Something was lower than it was the last time. We need you to come back. First of all, I ain't never had nobody ever hit me up that fast on blood work, right? Like you treating this like it's an emergency. Like, I feel like you're not telling me the truth on this. Like, I'm going to need you to come back in on this blood work. I say, cool. I come back in on the blood work. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I go in. They take my blood. And I'm like, cool. I'm about to go home. And they're like, all right, now we're going to take you in a room for you to wait until the doctor comes. I'm like, whoa, how long is this going to take, right? Like this sounds like something that's going to take a long time. So I'm in the room by myself, and apparently this is so important that the doctor need to tell me what he has seen before I leave. Like, I can't walk out of here. So I'm getting a little bit shook.
He wants to see you.
Yeah, like now I'm getting a little shook. And then I'm looking on the wall, and again, it's hematology and oncology. So all the literature that's on the wall is cancer.
Can we talk for a second just about all the medical posters that are on the wall in the doctor? Look, all I learned about eye was cornea, retina, optic nerve, and I know there's something called rods that help you see in the dark in the back of your eyeball. But they have your whole eye on the wall. Like, familiarize yourself with all of this before I come in the room. I ain't go to medical school. This poster ain't going to help me understand what you talking about. I didn't know an optic nerve had a required thickness level. Keep going. I'm sorry.
That's the inset on page 234 of your eighth grade science textbook, right? Like that. That's what that is. So I'm there. Now I'm looking at this stuff on the walls and it's talking about cancer. And I'm like, yo, what in the world might be happening here? My phone shakes. I look down. It's a text from my man Vinny. Sekou Smith died. So you've got me in here on these emergencies about my blood, and I'm looking at the cancer stuff on the wall, and I ain't do nothing like get up and start thumbing through it, but like, you got this on the wall, then you tell me that my mans has died. Now I'm like,
47 years old.
I ain't been this shook since the time I went to the doctor and they asked if I wanted an HIV test, and I said, cool, and then they said, come back in a month to get your results. And I was all good for 29 days, 23 hours, and 50 minutes. And then I walked in there, they took my blood pressure, and my shit looked like a batting average, right? Like, I'm like, oh. Like, they're like, whoa, this is way higher than the last time. Well, the last time, you wouldn't go tell me if I had it, all right? So I'm just in there, and I'm just like, oh my God, what is going on? What is like the worst case scenario that this might be? All of this. Doctor walks in. All right, you're good.
What? I'll slap you, man.
See, the problem is they be doing this shit every day. So like, none of this stuff is like a giant, colossal big deal to them. Because if it was, like I always talk about watching Law and Order SVU. If they really had 25 cases a year, like the ones that be on SVU, they'd be turning over that staff like UPS.
You'd be burnt out.
Yeah. So I guess these cats, they figure out how to do it, but they got to realize we don't do this every day. This is the second time you've ever seen me, homie. Clearly, I don't do this regularly.
That room need to be the room you go in after you find out the bad news. There needs to be a 50-50 room at every doctor's office. Like, you don't know, could be not. Just give me the magazines. And if it's bad, then move me to the room with the brochures. That's how it should go. Like, I've never experienced this level of just methodical, you're nothing. Like, it's just, I mean, it's the medical system. You know, it is what it is. But I need a doctor with a mechanic's energy.
Yes.
Like, when you go get your car checked, at no point does the mechanic make you feel like this is the end of your car. It could be the craziest, wildest. I blew a head gasket on I-20 trying to go to Freaknik in 1995. That's a separate conversation. And my mom calls AAA and we take the car in. And this is the year is 1995. It is an 87 Dodge Air Race. This car is done. This car has done all it could possibly do in life. It's Marino with the knee brace, 98, getting blown out by the Jaguars. Done. And the mechanic, yeah, man, just get another head gasket, rebuild the engine, and we just put a couple more things in there, and you'll be back on the road, man. It'll probably run you about $6,000. What you want to do? And it was just, it felt upbeat, but there's no, the eye doctor, they put the drops in, they put the light bulb in your face. She goes, Could be glaucoma. I'll be right back. Huh? You don't just say it like that, then leave the room. Sit with me. Where are my brochures?
Right.
If you like, and you then you look up at the wall and you see all of the these are the things. Like at the dentist's office, they always had that one jacked up mouth.
Yes.
On the wall. You can't do that to people, man. I need an eye doctor who just go, could be glaucoma, but ain't no thing. All you got to do is lose a little bit of weight, man. Get that right back straight. Your eyeball be good as new, man. But let me go check the scan just to make sure, because you might just need an air filter. Like, that's how I feel when I go get my oil change. I just feel like an air filter will fix everything. I know my car is a piece of trash. It was eye-opening. That's probably the best way to put it.
And you just made me think about something I hadn't considered, right? If there's something like with doctors and kids, or just generally speaking, if you like work in a world that serves kids, everything in the room is set up to make those children comfortable. All of it, right? They got all their little cool stuff on the wall, all their toys. You know what I'm saying? Like
Flintstone Band-Aids.
Yeah, they got everything. After we jab you. Yeah, they got everything to make kids comfortable. I got news for you, okay? If you send somebody to hematology and oncology, we all kids again now, right? Like, I think it would have been really nice if somebody had given me a stuffed animal. I wouldn't have been offended at all, right? And when they got it, they would have come in there and it would look like I was choking that thing to death because I'd have just been holding it tight, 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 I tell you, tight.
At least give me like a fathead athlete stuck to the wall. Can I see a Ken Griffey? Ken Griffey smile make me feel good.
They do something, right? But they don't do nothing for you when you're grown. All that's on the wall is something that is stark and dire.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training, just in time for summer and warmer days. I've been in the gym a little bit trying to get my fitness in check so I can break these skinny allegations I keep getting. And spring is the best time of the year to take a new look at your fitness routine, dial it up a notch, and continue powering on. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row, or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals while challenging yourself at every level. Now you can catch up on your favorite NBA games with NBA League Pass while you push yourself to new levels of fitness. Watch your favorite games and win your workouts with NBA League Pass on Peloton and visit onepeloton.com. Peloton All Access membership and NBA League Pass subscription required.
I started to text you this when I found out this piece of information about my family history, because I want to know what you would do in this scenario.
Yes.
So with as much as I can tell before the episode airs, I did an episode of Finding Your Roots.
Oh, with Skip.
Dr. Henry Louis Gates. I don't know if you've done it before. Nah. If not, I need to set up the parlay. If that's the type of stuff that you want to dig into and find out about your family. I was more appreciative of it on the backside. So he starts digging into my family. You know what he does. You give him your birth certificate and two family pictures, and then he tracks you all the way back to Africa. Like, I don't know what type of detective work his team does, but they dig up stuff. And so he found, I won't say the state, but he was able to track my family lineage all the way back to slave ships that arrived in South Carolina. And he has the paperwork from the man who purchased my, I guess, what, fourth, fifth generation grandfather or whatever. He has the paperwork, which means he has the name of the family that owned my family.
Ooh.
Which not a lot of black people have. So, Bomani Jones, if in the year 2021, you knew the last name and the city, you also know the city where these people existed, would you track down the descendants of your family slave masters? And if so, what the hell do you even say to them?
Well, that's what I was about to say. It all depends on what you mean by track down, because I don't know if
I'm not saying Liam Neeson and
No, but this is what I'm saying. I don't know if I would want to send them an email or like show up somewhere and have a conversation about it all.
White with the last name Wood, who probably, maybe, maybe gave my family the name Wood. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, so I don't know if I would want to have a chat with them about it, but I definitely would like to Google Earth their house and see how they are living. Right. I would want to get a look and see what they've been up to. Right. Like, because look, if they owned you, your people, they owned a few other people, all of which is to say they was rich. Now, did they stay rich? Don't know. We gonna find out.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, slavery was a come up for a lot of, you know, corporations and entities and all of that stuff. But when slavery ended, it was kind of like a blockbuster video scenario for a lot of slave owners. Like,
that's true.
What are we gonna pivot to? So it might have been the beginning of your family being broke as hell and y'all ain't bounced back. And I wonder if seeing the descendants of my family slave owners living broke would make me feel good. You know, like, I don't know. I'm not going to do it. But it's just, I have the information now. And I'd be lying if I said I'm not tempted every now and then to just go on, I don't know, ID background check, whatever the hell, and just track them. Because you're white, so your paperwork is solid all the way back to the old country. So I could for sure find them.
Yes.
Could for sure work my way down from the 1700s to 2021 and find your great-great-great-grandson. And it's not his fault. I'm not going to pull up on him wherever he's working and cuss him out at his job. Like, that's not the thing. But I am curious, like, what was that journey like for your family? Like, do y'all ever talk about it? Do you ever talk about the good old days when your great-great-grandfather ran a Blockbuster and, like, money was good and flowing?
Yo, I hadn't thought about this, right? Like, the generation of white people who were born in, like, 1890 or, like, 1900 or something like that, and they got some old relatives who are like, whoo, those were the days. You just get up, make some lemonade, and the money just come in. You ain't even got to do nothing.
Now I got to rake my own leaves.
I had thought about that. No, this is also something that has just dawned on me now while thinking about slavery. And I understand that talking about slavery makes people nervous, but we're not comparing anything to slavery. We're just talking about actually slavery and some things that you might have been too nervous yourself to ever consider, because y'all be getting shook talking about slavery and the rest of y'all be getting mad talking about slavery. Understandable on the second part. But we think about slavery and, like, the plantation, right? And the plantation has all the slaves who are out here doing this work. Or should we say enslaved people? Because I know that people, like, you know, being a slave is not who you are. All right, whatever. You know what I'm talking about, right? And so you think about them having, like, dozens of enslaved people doing work for no money. All right. Now, do we ever hear any stories about some white folks that got them some little bit of land and they just keep working and working and saving their money? And every day they dream about, one day I'm gonna get me one of them slaves, right? Like every day, like set the budget, stacking it up to try to get just one. Like, if I could just get me one,
it's like somebody trying to get just a little bit of Bitcoin. I just
want a little bit. Or somebody that's like, no, I gotta get this car, man. One day I'm gonna get me a car, right? Like, I got the car. Okay, now I gotta get enough money for the insurance. Cause that had to be an aspirational goal for the white folks that was out there, like, tilling their own fields.
Yeah, if you were broke and you couldn't afford to even buy a slave, and then you buy, but what do you do with one slave? Like, that, what do you do with one enslaved person? Like, that that's so insane.
Yeah, and you know what? They probably ain't even thought it out that far. Like, they get the one and then they're like, damn, now I need another one.
Yeah, but that's where racism came into play, because it's to make you feel like you still better than black people, even though you're broke.
Yes.
Like, that's 100% where it came from. But no, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do with this information. It's going to be public once the episode airs in a month or two. But I'm very curious. At minimum, just a Facebook search, right? That's harmless, right?
I was actually playing some Find Your Roots online the other day by accident. I'm not really going to throw no names out there, but I was looking up, I was thinking about some person, just going to call them a person. After I tell the story, we'll do the elevator music thing and I will tell you who the person was. Okay. So I was looking up some person and looking up that person led me to a page about that person's hometown, because I didn't know anything about the hometown. It's a little tiny town. And I'm going through the hometown. It's a tiny town. And apparently there was like a legendary lynching in that town. Like a huge, like a really big deal. And part of what was legendary about the lynching was that the dude they were going to lynch did not go alone. Right. Like he made it happy. Like he went down like guns a-blazing type of situation. And so I go check out the story about that guy. And as I'm going through the story about that guy, I see that somebody that was in the posse that was coming to get him had the same last name as the person I was looking up. And it's a town that only had like 500 people or something like that.
So that name is for sure lineage.
Yo, I was like, huh, I would like to play this game myself. Now, Gabe, hit the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
So yes, curious. Would love to know, like, exactly what it is.
The other thing about the doctor, and that ties into this and the lineage stuff, is how much, because we don't go to the doctor enough, right? Even black folks that go to the doctor don't really talk about what happened at the doctor. Yo, I ain't ever been more dumbfounded than on them family history questions when I go to the doctor. Because I wasn't really that close with my daddy's side. I know a little bit about my mama's side. I'm close with them, but we don't never. So, Aunt Rose, tell me about every health scare you ever had. But you need that information so that the doctor can give you a better diagnostic. And I'm sitting there like, do you know any family? Nope. Look, this is what I know. My daddy died of prostate cancer. My mama had a gallbladder took out. All right. And we like fried foods. There's some cholesterol fluctuations on that side. That's all I got for you. Well, do you know any history of the, hey, look, don't know. All right. If you want, I can text everybody. Everybody, like every black family just needs to have an anonymous all in. I don't know what you call it. I don't know if this is an app or what, but just a way to anonymously say what your health ailments are so that they're just all in a bucket for the rest of the family to come back and look at. We ain't got to know who dealing with what. You know, it could be glaucoma. It could be crabs, whatever your ailment is, just declare it in this little bucket so that everybody can come back and I can just take that app and show it to my doctor and go, this is what everybody in my family going through or has been through. So you can figure out which pill to give me.
It would actually be very funny if you showed up and said that we have a family history of crabs and they'd be like, yo, that sounds like a personal problem, homie. You know what I'm saying?
Y'all, your family got a history of bad decisions.
Yeah. Like, this all on y'all. Like, this ain't what it is, man. How the quarantine treating you, man?
We good over here, man. You'll love and hate this. So the boy, well, he's 4, so I guess I should call him a child. But the boy has discovered basketball.
Oh.
So I didn't push this on him. I've been a proponent of soccer and baseball in this house because it's guaranteed contracts, larger rosters, more opportunities to work professionally from coast to coast than basketball offers you. And so now in the middle of snowstorms and 18 degree wind chills, he wants to go outside and dribble. And I can't tell him no, because that's my boy. And if he want to do something that makes him active, as a father, it's my job to support him and blah, 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 blah. But I've been freezing my ass off outside with a 4-year-old watching him learn how to dribble a basketball. And it's the most happiest and most miserable I've been all at the same time.
I can see that. It's the love. And it's like, cool of you to do that. I'm kind of curious, like, where this dribbling is taking place, because it's still snow on the ground over here.
It's one little overhang in our apartment building that they shovel every day. And that's his spot. Just outside on the curb, dribble, dribble, dribble. And I stand between him and the curb so the ball don't go in the street, because it will go in the street because he's not that great at dribbling yet. And it's weird in a way, though, because I can't remember when I discovered certain sports. I don't remember the first day I played baseball. I don't remember the first time I picked up a basketball. My guess is school, you know, I guess elementary school, you know, you go to gym and they introduce you to every sport on earth over the course of 5 years of elementary school. But I can't remember. I can't remember in the least. So there's that. And there's been, this is probably the most Bed Bath & Beyond subject I've ever brought up on your podcast. For Christmas, somebody gave me a weighted blanket, and I love it.
Yo, so check this out, right?
I love it.
I have found that in the time of quarantine, I have really slowed down on spending money on, like, unnecessary things. You know, like, that's not where I am right now. I'm not doing that. I've been real good about keeping my money right on unnecessary things. But what I do now is, like, buy home stuff, because it's probably a good idea to buy some of this home stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I looked it up. It was like, okay, you should change the sheets every 2 or 3 years. Like, change them out, not change them. Change them out, get new ones. And so I switched out all my sheets, right? Like, it was about that time with all my sheets.
With fabric, bro. You go bamboo? Did you go silk?
It's hard for me to talk about it without giving them free pub, but it's like, I'm not exactly sure what the material is. I'll look it up right now, but it's nice. It's nice. I got the sheets, but I got 3 sets of them, and the sheets are kind of pricey. Therefore, they gave me a free gift with the sheets, which was a weighted blanket. All right. So I needed a new blanket for the couch. And so I have the weighted blanket. First of all, people who do not have weighted blankets, them things are heavy. Like, they are not for the, you're going to need to get your workout on a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
maybe.
You ain't going to skip arm day trying to pull this thing up on you. It's basically like the vest they put on you before they give you an x-ray at the dentist.
Yes. Do not try to roll over under the weighted blanket.
It scared me the first day I woke up with the weighted blanket in the bed, because the way me and my girl sleep, sometimes, like, the blanket will just sit down in between us. And I woke up for a split second. I go, who is in this bed with us? Because, you know, you hear them stories of people breaking in the house. They crawl up in the bed with you and just take a nap. Like, for a split second, I'm like, where's the knife?
Uh-huh, man. The weighted blanket. This is why my personal advice for people about the weighted blanket. The weighted blanket is not the lay on the couch and watch TV blanket. It can be, right? But if it is your lay on the couch and watch TV blanket at 3 o'clock, you will not be watching television again until 6:30.
It is like a warm hug from the relative that you always wished loved you more. That's what a weighted blanket is.
Yeah. Like, it is, I've heard people talk about them and everything else, but I do have to admit that I would sit on the couch with the weighted blanket over my legs and be ready to fall asleep sitting straight up at a 90-degree angle.
Sitting there like Charles Xavier with a little blanket over your lap. Yeah. Just chilling, man. Yeah. Nah, that's been it, man. I haven't really been binging anything. I've been trying to write some scripts and trying to make sure that I keep food on the table in case, you know, this pandemic go a little longer. You'll be proud of me on this. Well, I don't know if you'll be proud. You'll probably be disappointed in me. I had a chance to get on the vaccine list, and I respectfully declined because, you know, I care about the world and I care about people.
So basically, you declined because you don't think it's appropriate for you to be ahead of the line.
There you go. If I could catch me some of that leftover vaccine at 5:30 when the pharmacy closing down, give me that. You had a couple of no-shows? Oh, I'm with that 100%. But I don't want to just show up at the vaccine site at 10 in the morning because somebody hooked me up and put me on the list. Like that one lady, there was a lady who tried to list herself as an educator. Like, teachers are like 1A or 1B on the list. And she goes, I too am an educator. And then it like was revealed later, she's like an exercise instructor at a gym. It's like, no, you're not an educator. You lead people in 8 counts for cardio. Sure.
You teach a class.
Yeah. Which technically is an educator. To teach is to, but you're not what we're talking about, ma'am. Nice try. So, no, there's like some, God, I don't know if I should even say this. I don't know if I want to give away the game. But basically, there are ways that entertainers, if they want to, basically, you can take your 1099s and reclassify your form of employment from comedian to something else.
Ah.
Full stop right there. But basically, what's on your 1099s is what you are. You can choose to be what the 1099, you get what I'm saying? So in that regard, like, for example, this isn't the way that the people I know are doing it in entertainment, but this is just an example. I could, much like the aerobics instructor, right? I could say, yeah, I did a corporate gig. So I'm a speaker. So essentially, I'm an educator because it was a seminar. It was a comedy show at a Christmas party. But no. 1099 says I spoke. Every other paperwork, it says I was a speaker. I spoke at this thing. And as a speaker, I am an educator and I travel and I run seminars. And I could get myself on the list like that. If like that's one way. You can, and it's not just entertainers. If you're 1099 in general, there's ways you can kind of shortcut the game. But nah, I couldn't do it. But I am trying to figure out where I can go camp out at 5:29 right before that pharmacy closed.
But they trying to throw people in jail for closing time vaccines in New York. Like, that's the dumbest thing in the world that they doing here is the absolute if you're not on the list program. Nah, if they going to have to throw this out, man, shoot me up.
Wait, I can't even get it at 5:29. And they would rather throw it away.
They would rather throw it away. Like, you can get it. You just better hope nobody ever finds out.
See,
it's the dumbest thing in the world.
That ain't worth it.
I tell you this, though. I appreciate you explaining to me how it is that people are doing this, though, because I've been wondering, like these big movie studios and stuff like that. Man, you ain't going to tell me that anybody in Hollywood that could get like $20 million a movie, there is a vaccine available for you. I am positive.
This is when I knew. You ever have a moment where you realize how much further you have to go in the get money game?
Oh, yeah. I lived in Miami. Every day it was a reminder of how much farther I had to go. Like, when I realized that my dream, this place I had that was like doper than anything I ever dreamed I would live in, when I realized I was the only person for whom this was their only residence. That's what and the day I walked in the lobby and saw Bob Johnson just posted up, I was like, oh yeah, I got a long way to go.
Two balconies and you're basic. You're basic, and you had two balconies.
Right. I am in a building where everybody's wondering how the hell I got there, and my response is, I would ask the same thing if I were you.
So when I found out there's such a different, of course there's elitism, but when in Kevin Hart's No F's Given special, first joke out the gate, he starts talking about somebody in the house testing positive for COVID. And he goes, so I called someone to come test everybody in the house. I had to pause the DVD. I said, excuse me? So you just got somebody pulling up to the crib? That just, yeah, we're going to test everybody. And we'll just all sit right here while we wait on the results and go grab a beverage and come back and I'll let you know whether or not you're there. Now, of course, we have testing on site. I've been on sets in the last couple of months where you have the COVID compliance officer who's there to test everyone and make sure your mask is, you know, not hanging below you, whatever. But that's when I realized, oh, yeah, y'all for sure got the vaccine. I know it's some vaccine out here for y'all. Y'all done just took that private jet to Australia somewhere where you can get it. Went to New Zealand where it's zero case, like I think one case in the last 6 months or something wild. But nah, I don't. As much as I would like to grab that vaccine right quick, I'm not on the Tuskegee with it. Give it to me. I'm fine.
Yeah, out here.
These companies that made everything else, if they going to get us, they going to get us. You hating on the vaccine with an iPhone. So
yeah, I would not be skeptical of the vaccine in that way. I would be skeptical of a cure in that way. Because that's the thing about Tuskegee, right? Like, everybody throws out Tuskegee, but what they're missing is Tuskegee, people started with a disease. They told them they were going to cure the disease, and instead, they was just in there f***ing around, right? But you had to start off, like, the big problem is that you started off with syphilis. And then they told you they was going to take care of you, and they're like, ha-ha, we're here to learn, right? Yeah. The vaccine, not the same situation, number one. Number two, and this is the big one, just go get in line with some white folks if you that worried.
Go to the good side of town.
Yeah, well, one thing I'm trying to remember. Oh, this was something I read a few months ago about COVID, and I think it was about contact tracing. And they said that a big difference between Americans and everybody else in the world in terms of, like, getting people to be complicit. Now, of course, some of these countries also being complicit is not an option. They make you complicit, right? But they said the difference between Americans and pretty much everybody else in the world is everybody else in the world had no expectation of privacy on their devices and stuff. Like, we out here like, yo, this is my phone. I don't want nobody in my business knowing this stuff. And everybody else, they're like, dog, they know.
Dude, when they had the uprising in Egypt, I think 5-6 years ago, that particular uprising, they straight cut off the internet. Like, the government was like, all right, that's how y'all organizing all these protests to try and get change and progress. No more internet. Now, how y'all going to organize against me now? Take the internet away from them. And it's the same thing in other countries. Yeah, I just think that the way they're treating the vaccine at the end of the day is as stupid as fast food restaurants that chunk the food because they're scared of a lawsuit.
Yep.
And we used to, man, let me tell you, man, when I was at FAMU, we used to go to the Popeyes on Tennessee Street, and we would time it perfectly. We would go at 10:45, and I can tell this story because I would imagine at this point, if Miss Dot still works there, she's an untouchable, so I'm not dry snitching, or she's retired and moved on to Popeyes corporate. But there was one lady there, Miss Dot, and she understood, like, just college students and hunger and just what that, just like how, like, so we would go in Popeyes right before they close, and we would get, like, a, you know, just a little 4-piece box, me and my dog. And Miss Dot would come up around the counter, talk to us face to face. How you boys doing in school? How's everything good? Is y'all hungry? And then she'd turn to one of her coworkers, give him 3 more boxes. Give him 3 more boxes. Put some beans in there too. And dog, we would come back to campus with a 50 piece of chicken that was going to get thrown out anyway and sell them joints for 50 cent a piece in front of Gibbs Hall. And, like, that's what they should be doing with the vaccine. At the end of the night, you ain't doing nothing with it. Just give it to me. How you doing, baby? Y'all want some vaccine? Go on back there, give him 3 vials. Give him 3.
There's nothing quite like figuring out who the person is at your collegiate local fast food establishment who is heavy-handed on whatever the thing is that we're talking about with being heavy-handed.
Address them by their name. If you address them by their name, ask them how their day is going. I guarantee you within a month, you'll see results.
Well, let me ask you this. What was the relationship between the students and the locals at FAMU?
I'll be frank. We looked down on locals because they weren't in college and they were seen as, you know, country bumpkins in a way.
Yes.
Which is ironic, yes, considering that, you know, it's Tallahassee.
It's FAMU. Yes, FAMU.
But yeah, you were local. You know, yeah. Locals always come to the FAMU events and mess up everything. These locals, these hood, it was very much, you're not in college like me, so therefore I'm better than you. It's like,
yeah. See, Clark had that same problem, right? A lot of students that was feeling that way. And at the median, CAU student body a little bougier than FAMU's because this is not a state institution, right? Like, this is, you know, you got a lot more frou-frou walk around there, and they would be good for treating them folks bad, folks in the cafeteria, whatever. The coach in the cafeteria did not like us at all. Like, they was, because cats would just be out there talking to them like some wild ways for whatever reasons. And you also had people who were not bougie who came in but was trying to front bougie. And so part of their front bougie would be like lashing out at the cafeteria workers and stuff like that. Now, I was raised on a college campus, basically, and something that my daddy explained to me and my brother and my sister very early in life that I have taken with me. And he was like, the people you need to be nice to are not the people with titles. You need to be nice to the people who work in the cafeteria. You need to be nice to the secretaries. You need to be nice to the janitors. Those are the people who like can actually do things for you that are going to matter in your life. And on top of that, he's like, damn it, you need to be nice to them just on the strength of being nice to them. So what you said was exactly it. You walk up in the spot, like the Popeyes on Lee Street over by Clark. It was always, hey, how you doing, right? Because they were not expecting that from me. They were not expecting that from my crew. Man, mm-hmm. It wasn't long till that three-wing dinner was turning into a three-breast dinner. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Right? You know, like, oh, here's a couple extra cups for that drink. Wasn't long before we was getting that. Hey, Michelle, like, all we had to do was be nice. Man, one time I went to the damn grocery store, the Cub Foods at Greenbrier Mall, and you have to understand that the Cub Foods over there, like, I wouldn't recommend buying no produce at that spot. Like, it was, you know, that type of grocery store. And now it is gone. It has been replaced by an Everest College location.
Is it one of the grocery stores that always smelled like it had a seafood department, but it didn't have one?
Yes. That is correct. That is correct. But I go through and we get in line and a woman, you know, scanning the things. And me and the homie are just being nice to her. Next thing I'm knowing, I'm like, ain't no way I got all these groceries for $50, man. She was hopping that thing over the scanner. She was just whoop. Like, boop, boop. Then it was just like hopping that thing over the scanner. I was like, and it was all just being nice. She gave me a phone number. I called her a couple times just to see how she was doing. But then I stopped going to Cub Foods, so there was no need to maintain that relationship.
I had a plug at the Sprint store. Ooh, back when it was still called Sprint PCS.
Yes.
The red uniform. Y'all don't know nothing about them throwback Sprint jerseys. It wasn't always yellow. They had the red and the gray joints. Back when Singular Wireless, pre-AT&T, I'm old. And I would go in there, bro. And this is when nights and weekends was still like 9 p.m. Gave me 7 p.m. nights, which don't sound like a lot, but that is legit a savings of like $60, $70. Just a little 2 hours of minutes not being used. So, yeah, you got to be nice to people, man. Maybe that's what I need to do with this vaccine is just go down there and ask them about their day. And then...
It might work.
Maybe I can get some out the back door. But no, I didn't know that about New York. I didn't know they were trying to like straight up make it illegal. Like if you're gaming the system, we will send you to jail.
Yeah, well, it was like at first it was understandable on principle because I think part of what they were worried about, though, is just all these rich people, right? Like finding a way to mess it up. Because what you could do is have a whole bunch of people call in and schedule a bunch of bogus appointments. And then when those people cancel, you just be there like, hey, heard you got that there.
That's free game right there. Hold on, let's pause. That's free game. You just gave away.
Yeah. That's what we need to do.
You didn't give it away. This is just hypothetically.
Right. I am simply speaking as to why it is that I could understand why the governor is being such a hard ass about the idea of like why we gonna throw him out every night. But if I know anything about this world, my brother, I know this. I don't know if there's some like special treatment that you got to do to the vaccine. Like, I don't know if there's something after you get the vial that you got to do, like some level of instruction, right?
Yeah.
But I do know this. Amateurs inject things into themselves all the time.
Successfully. Okay?
All the time, right? Which is to say, I ain't never heard of anybody at any store who was told to throw stuff out at the end of the night who throws out things that they themselves want. Okay.
Oh, of course not.
Somebody or things that they know that other people might want. There is an underground vaccine market that we are unaware of. And suddenly somebody is pulling up to the Walgreens like, yo, where'd you get that new car from?
But would you trust a dude like, you know about this because you've been in the hood enough. The dude that's selling bootleg cologne.
Yes.
And it's all in the same style bottle, but somehow each bottle is a different fragrance.
Yes.
That's Polo. That's Cool Water. That's Truckle. And I'm like, they all look the same. They all have the same color, viscosity. How are these all the same? How are these different in, you know, in the back of a Home Depot?
No. I wouldn't trust his needle. I feel like I can get one of those myself. right? Like I would not trust his needle. But if the bottle got a plastic seal on it, right? Like if the bottle is drum tight.
I don't know. The plastic has to have the printing. It has to have like the Moderna logo in the plastic sealing.
Yes. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if I would do it, but we know somebody would do it. Because I got no idea when we're going to get that vaccine up here. Like, I looked at something on the internet that said it would be like July or something like that.
And that's why I don't feel bad for trying to get some of that leftover drip at 5:29
p.m. That's what I'm saying.
Because you're telling me to wait my turn when your system isn't even efficient. So I'm waiting and waiting and waiting on a system that's already clearly inefficient. You know what? I might have to shoot up in the back of a Home Depot. It might be vaccine. It might be milky water.
Yeah, I'm just saying. There is an economy that is building now based around, look, once people want it and you can't get it to them, they gonna get it themselves. Hard stop. That is how markets work.
I didn't think about that. Because you know what you could be doing, Bo? If you're the person that's legit giving out the vaccines, let's say you're supposed, I don't know measurements of medicine, but I'm going to use some stuff I heard on Chicago Med. 50 cc's. Yeah. Let's say each vaccine dose is 50 cc's. What if I just pull 40 and keep the 10 over the course of the day? I've got 4 or 5 extra vials of overage that I just never gave you. And they're both, like, it's the same thing I used to do when I worked at Subway, where the meat packs would be set up where we counted everything at Subway,
right?
At least back in the 90s. I don't know how they do it now, but you counted all of the pre-packaged meat that you put on each sandwich. So if you ordered double meat, I would just take the single meat and make it look like it's double. And then you would know that you got shorted. So now I got an extra piece of meat to add to my sandwich on my lunch break. So it's the same concept, but with the vaccine. And it's got to be somebody.
It's funny you mention that. It's not even on the slick with that. Apparently, in some of the first rounds of the vaccine that they were sending out amounts in the vials that was actually more than the dose. And so they was winding up with a little left here, little left here, little left here, little left here. And then on the back end, they actually had like thousands and thousands more doses.
Exactly.
Because they had been putting too much in the package. And then that's what's going out the back door.
You short everybody just a little, whatever that last line is on the needle, just don't give them that. And then you run them out the back door like PlayStation 5. I bet you Best Buy ain't just throwing out PlayStation 5s that somebody bought but never picked up. No, you resell that joint. This is so stupid.
Imagine what would happen to you if your boss saw you throw something in the dumpster and was like, yo, what's that? PlayStation 5? Why? They ain't come get it. Now, first of all, your boss would assume that the reason that you threw that out is because after closing time, you was going to come get that thing out. But, like, your boss, yo, get this dude up out of here.
I don't know, man. I just hope my mom gets it. My mom is still an educator, thank God. What is it called? The at risk. I don't know if I like that label.
Well, my dad is 84. My parents old. They getting their second dose this weekend. And they are definitely in the at risk situation. Probably the pandemic is all that time at home is creating a whole new at risk situation, which is people who don't need to be spending that much time with
you. You know what statistic I've been most fascinated by in the pandemic is that pregnancies are down.
Yes.
And that was the first thing at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, it's going to be a lot of pandemic babies. You know, everybody's going to. Nah, people got sick of each other and they want that old thing back. But you can't go to that old thing because she lived cross country. And ain't no way to, when everything, like, it's like we talked about before, the pandemic. Everything's closed. You can't come up with a reason to leave the house. Like all them old lies you used to use to slip out the door. Well, you go, something at work. Really? What's going on? The work is closed. You have no office. Well, you know, we're having a retreat. No, you're not. You're not having a retreat. That place is at 25% capacity. They're not even allowing that many people to come into the hotel. I got to go do a Zoom call from another building. I'll be back in 2 days.
Well, I think it was some people that might have got caught slipping on the pregnancy like early in the pandemic, right? But then after a while, everybody got tired of each other. And it's not really the wise. I imagine it's quite an inconvenient pregnancy to be pregnant during a pandemic, you know? Yeah. And so, like, there's, I think there is as much men and women that are like, yo, we ain't going, no, it ain't going to be that. Plus, you know, we got this whole generation that is actually, like, having less sex than any generation ever has, which is nothing to be proud of.
To be fair, they out there protesting. They angry. You come home with frustration. Man. You ain't never had sex after no protest. You got to come home.
I don't know about that.
Wait a minute. What kind of protest?
Here's why I'm not sure about that. Let me tell you what leaders of protest typically do a lot of. They be pulling. Like, if nothing else, the dude at the front of the protest has everybody. It's like being at the front of the church. Is it counterintuitive that it's a bunch of women that want to sleep with the pastor? Perhaps. Is there a line of them that would love nothing more? Oh, yeah.
You sure did look cute out there marching.
Dog, that's it.
Here's a thought that's as indecent as a broke white person affording their first slave. All right, so at a comedy show, right, from what I've seen, I am not sexy in that sense. I'm sure there's people who find me attractive and vice versa. I get that. But I'm not Bill Bellamy. I'm not Eddie Murphy in the purple leather. You know what I'm saying? My comedy doesn't exude that. My persona doesn't exude that. The comedians who I've opened for who have, you know what? This is a good example. And I can say his name because he would vouch for this. The homie D-Ray Davis. You know him from Snowfall on FX right now. So D-Ray has a persona that women are just drawn to. And I've seen after a show where it'll just be people off to the side. Go on, take your pictures. Go on, do your little meet and greet. I'm going to be over here because I just want to have a conversation. Like, it's that type of vibe I've seen with, you know, certain comedians, right? And, like, I remember, I'll tell you his name off the air. But there was a comedian 10, 15 years ago when I came backstage, I was opening for him. And there was, like, 10 women in the green room chilling, waiting, who drove from Atlanta to Birmingham to meet this gentleman and to say hello to this gentleman. So I've seen that world as it relates to entertainment. What does it look like at the end of a civil rights protest in the 60s? Like, what's the let out? Like, at the end, like, the protest at some point, the walk concludes and we go, all right, we did it. Let's head home. What's that meet and greet? Like, how do you come up? Because, and this is a real thought I've had that I just don't say publicly. If Dr. King and all of them was cheating at the time, when do you pull a woman after a protest? Like, where is the opportunity for that interaction? Like, is it after church? Well, sister, I sure would love to come over and try some of your cornbread. Like, is that when you do it? Or is it, like, right after the baby? Because you ain't really giving nobody your phone number in 1963.
No. That is correct. Now, here's the thing I think that you are missing out on. One, it's not I would love to try your cornbread as much as I think in a lot of those circumstances, it is you should try my cornbread. Right? That's number one. Number two, there is a serious level of passion and emotion in all of these things that are involved that for a lot of people are very sexy. And number three, this is the big one. I am not a scientist. I am not an anthropologist. I do not want to pretend as though I know everything in the world about women and that every woman is the same. But if there is anything that I have felt like I have learned in my time is that on average, if you want to find something that will make you attracted to a woman, be in charge of a room and do the job capably. It doesn't matter what job it is. If you are the assistant manager at Church's Fried Chicken, and when you walk in and you tell people to do things and they say, yes, sir, you're going to do some winning. Right. So these cats, they out here taking down the man. They like you stand in front of the room. And you say, I am. And somebody says back, a man. And they throw up fists. There ain't no conversation that has to be had at that point.
I'm the alpha male in this situation.
Yeah. I had a housewarming party when I was 24. Bought a house, had a housewarming party. It was deep up in the spot, right? Cool. We get into the end of the night. Everybody's gone home or whatever. And I had three homies staying at the house with me. Okay. Three homies. So I'm 24 years old and I have three of my friends in my home. Okay. However, after everybody was gone, at the end of the night, it was three women just kind of posting up, not talking to each other, but just standing there. Just standing there, playing the game, right? Just standing there. And I'm like, all right, I guess you guys will work this out amongst yourselves. Just standing there, just standing there, just standing there. And all I was the dude who threw the housewarming. But I was the dude that was walking around and talking to different groups, and everybody laughed when I said something. Like, if you have a level of import, you got a good chance.
It don't matter what the message is. You just got to be in control. Charles Manson had groupies.
Yes, yes. Now, here's my question, though, about the civil rights thing. So, like, King at the front, you know what I'm saying? He running this. You got, like, Ralph Abernathy.
John Lewis in the cut.
Well, we'll see. That's the question I was going to have, because John Lewis was the little homie in the crew.
At the time, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he was kind of learning. He wasn't the leader at this. He was the little homie in the crew. So, like, the let out for John Lewis, at first, John Lewis, like, I always got to go home by myself. You know, he's 23. He new to the game.
I get what you're saying.
John Lewis started fighting the man, and he reacted to the world like I did after my growth spurt. It was like, wow, I grow 6 inches, and everybody treats me differently. Who knew?
It's the Jodeci story in Valdosta, Georgia. Have I ever told you that story?
No.
So I was in Valdosta, and I was the headliner at the local comedy club. And this is at a time where I just started headlining. So you couldn't tell me nothing. I'm the man. Tonight in Valdosta, it's Friday night in Valdosta. This is like, I don't know, 01, 02 money. And this is on the backside of Jodeci. And so me and my man Henry Coleman, we're sitting in front of the Holiday Inn Express in Valdosta, and a limo pulls up. And in the lobby of the hotel, we're out front. Now, mind you, me and Henry, we're out front waiting for the promoter to come get us. We like two kids waiting on the school bus. And in the lobby of the hotel, there's probably about 20 women all dressed way too lightly for the weather conditions, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And a promoter dude kind of snakes through the lobby, and he's just pointing. He just randomly points at women, and they come with him, and they all get in the limo. And then just, I don't know, like some sort of glow, Casey and JoJo just float through the lobby, and they get to the limo, and the girls, hey, and they're all excited. And Casey looks back at me and Henry Coleman, and he just goes, one day, boys, one day. And just gets in the limo, and the limo drives off. And it's like that moment where you go, there's a whole nother level.
I also think that you were hoping that he's like one day, and maybe that will be the one day, but I personally will hope that one day for me was not at the Holiday Inn Express. That's just me.
I mean, you do what they were Jodeci. They were, that was the, speaking of which, Jodeci could do a versus. That would be amazing. I don't know who we put him against. That was on the, I think he had already done, they had done a lot of the drugs at this point, but they were still touring on, you know, the catalog at that point. I don't even think they had a new album. It was Valdosta, Georgia. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, yeah.
With respect to the VSU Blazers, no disrespect. But
yeah, yeah, they get sensitive when you talk bad about them. I've learned this lesson the hard way. Nah, this is like, we are living in interesting times as we all try to navigate our way through this pandemic.
How do people flirt now with the mask and stuff? I don't even think flirting is a thing anymore just because of just, you know, in terms of being considerate and respectful to people just in general. But the common level chemistry that happens from casual conversation.
But here's the other thing, man. I'm not really trying to get in breathing range of strangers right now. I don't know how y'all out here living. I'm on the Instagram. I see how people getting down. I can't trust no stranger right now.
I'm so happy that I'm in a relationship, man. Could you imagine him calling somebody telling one of y'all gave me COVID?
Yes. No, no, no. We have turned breathing into unprotected sex.
Yo, legit, taking the mask off? That's the new first base. That's like, do I trust you enough to get my face naked for you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You cool and all, but I don't know if you were just breathing your raw dog air.
I don't know what you've been doing. I don't know who you've been doing it with.
Breathe my exhales.
A lot of people telling me stories about folks being like, yeah, I want to come catch up with you. Yeah, I want to come do this or whatever. And I'm like, yo, I just don't. And of course, people doing it. And I'm like, that just doesn't seem like a wonderful idea, ladies and gents.
Yeah, there's you also find out a lot about your friends during this time. family too. Man, I called one of my family members. This was early in the pandemic. This is like June, July. Well, they once I tell the story, they're going to know. It's Mississippi. And this is, we hadn't even got numbers from Mississippi yet at this point. And, you know, everybody's being super careful. And what are we do? We rented a car and drove directly to my mom. We stopped twice for gas. No one got out on the out the car. You peed one time and we keep going. I call everybody in Mississippi. What y'all up to? None. We just over here playing cards, Glenn and them barbecuing. We about to go see what Shirley and them doing around the corner. Okay, well, we will not be visiting over there. Y'all have a good rest of the year. Like, y'all just had a whole-ass house party. Like, you call, and you can hear Bobby Blue Bland playing in the background. Anytime the blues is up that loud in somebody's house in Mississippi, oh, it's at least 20 people in that house.
Yes.
Give or take.
Yeah, and I'm just like, nah, I can't. I can't, because everybody's like, oh, yeah, I'm careful. I have not seen one person, like, when you ask them how they live in, that's like, I'm just out here, right? Everybody say they careful.
I've gone consistently to the grocery store, the post office, and Dunkin' Donuts. I just put on the books in May my first comedy show since February 29th. And even that, I'm not even 100% sure that I'm going to do. I know by the end of the year, I need a new hour of comedy to put on television. So I need to get in the gym. I don't know if New York City is the best place to work out jokes because the comedy community here is split on vaccine. We're split on masks. Hell, there's some communities don't even agree with sharing microphones. They still want to share microphones. I'm like, nah, man, let them wipe the mic, get your own. Nah, I'll just use yours.
No, you won't.
Yo, I'm out here like, who was that at the inauguration? Was it Lady Gaga with the gold microphone? I'm out here like that, bro. I'm finna buy my own mic and have that thing in a case like a pool stick. A pool cue. I'm walking in the comedy club with my mic like a saxophone. I'm gonna get on stage and open. It's gonna be all part of my routine.
I'm surprised that's not becoming the industry standard, to be honest.
Nah, you got a lot of spots that don't care, man. But, you know, if these clubs are running at limited capacity, you know, we'll see. The one thing New York City is doing that's dope with comedy, the outdoor shows in the park, those will come back in the spring. I might do some of those. Those are fun. They're a little weird because there's kids out there and you can't cuss. But I don't know. Everything that makes comedy great in New York makes COVID great. You need a low ceiling. You need everybody close together. And you need everybody exhaling. A laugh ain't nothing but a controlled cough, bro. So,
yeah,
I'm just not. I don't know, man.
Nah, we will not. Now this, Roy Wood Jr., check him out on The Daily Show. And at some point after he compiles his 1 hour of televisable comedy, we will be able to check that out also. Glad your eyes are good, man.
Yeah, man. Maybe that's what they need to put up on the wall at all these corona vaccine places. It's just all the sexual positions that are COVID safe.
Be helpful to know. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.